Civics 101 is supported in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Who is the current Speaker of the House?
Don't even know.
Will they rule in the president's favor or will they send it to the Supreme Court?
You can't refer to a senator directly by their name.
Congressional redistricting.
Separation of power.
Executive orders.
The National Security Council.
Civics 101.
I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Civics 101, the podcast refresher course on the basics of how our democracy works. On March 5th, an immigration program known as DACA, short for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, will officially expire. President Trump announced his decision to end DACA in September of last year and called on Congress to vote on a bill to reinstate the program before it expires. Sarah Gonzalez is catching us up on the program and what its cancellation could mean for U.S. immigration. She covers youth and families for WNYC in New York. And Sarah, a hearty welcome to Civics 101.
Thank you.
So first of all, what is DACA and how does it work?
So DACA is an acronym. It stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. So basically, back in 2012, the Obama administration said that it would temporarily defer the deportation of certain undocumented young people who were brought to the United States by their parents when they were young children. So it applied to teens who arrived in the U.S. under the age of 16. They had to have lived in the U.S. for at least 5 years at the time when Obama made that announcement. They had to be in school or high school graduates or military veterans in good standing, and they can't have a criminal record. So at the time, you also couldn't be over the age of 30 to qualify, but Obama later lifted that age cap. But the idea was basically that these young people were brought to the U.S. by their parents when they were really young, like 3 months old or 4 years old or 7 or 13 years old. And Obama said, you know, we shouldn't punish these young people who didn't have a say in how they got here.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that these kids would no longer face deportation temporarily for 2 years at a time until Congress passed real immigration reform. So the most significant thing that DACA offered these young people, who are known as Dreamers, by the way, is a work permit. DACA gave them a 2-year work permit that they could renew every 2 years, and they could get a driver's license or an ID, and they could travel abroad. So they could leave the country and be guaranteed admission back into the United States, even if they're undocumented.
Said a couple of key things there that we'll dig into, executive action and Dreamers. Is DACA the same as the Dream Act?
So DACA kind of stems from the Dream Act. So let's start back in 2001. In 2001, that was the first time that this thing called the Dream Act was introduced. It was a bipartisan bill that was going to create a path to citizenship or a path to some form of legal status for kids that we're talking about, these kids who were brought to the United States by their parents. So the DREAM Act is also an acronym, and it stands for the Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors Act. And this has been reintroduced a couple of times, but it has repeatedly failed. So let's fast forward to 2008. As a presidential candidate, Obama promised that he was going to introduce comprehensive immigration reform in his first year in office. But then he didn't introduce this legislation. He focused instead on healthcare and the economy, which, you know, at the time we were like right at the height of the recession. So in 2010, Democrats lost control of Congress, and Senate Democrats were 5 votes short of the 60 that they needed to pass the DREAM Act. And when that happened, that's sort of when people referred to that time as the end of comprehensive immigration reform. That's when it felt like it was dead for a very long time. So then after that, Obama decides, you know, he's going to use his power, his executive action power, to kind of keep his promise, I guess, that he had made on the campaign trail to provide these young people with some kind of path to citizenship. And so that's when he introduces deferred action, DACA. At the time, about 740,000 young people were going to be eligible. As of today, about 800,000 young people have benefited from this program. So DACA is sort of the temporary fix to the DREAM Act, which still has not passed.
All right. So you mentioned you have to be under 16 when you arrived in the U.S. Clean criminal record, must be in high school, college, or military. Do we know where most people are coming from who are now eligible for DACA?
So as far as where they are and where they're coming from, the biggest percentage of DACA recipients live in California. So it's about 30% live in California. Texas is the next biggest, or has the next biggest group. About 15% live in Texas. And then after that, it's Illinois and New York. Those are the biggest states with DACA recipients. In terms of where they're coming from, most of them were born in Mexico or Central or South America. So about 650,000 of them come from that area. But then there's like 18,000 who were born in Asia and 5,000 who were born in Europe. So they come from all over the place, the Caribbean, Africa. And in terms of what they do, you know, DACA recipients are teachers. They're public school teachers. They're paramedics who, you know, help save people's lives. They're lawyers. They're sort of everyone, and they're everywhere. They have work permits, so they can work in any field. And this, by the way, is the big point of contention among Republicans. Not necessarily Republican lawmakers, but Republican voters. Many don't want young people to be able to work lawfully in the United States. Like groups that want tighter control on illegal and legal immigration, they want DACA to end because that will take away their work permits. That's their big thing. And, you know, usually when I interview some of these conservative groups and think tanks and voters, if you ask, like, why do you care so much that young people lose their work permits? The answer is sort of they're undocumented and they shouldn't be allowed to work here. But the thinking is really that if they lose their work permits, all of these people will voluntarily leave the United States.
Well, let me ask you about that, because the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, said in September that DACA recipients take jobs from people in the U.S. What kind of data did he have to back that up?
I guess it's easy to, if you hear that immigrants, undocumented immigrants, are able to work in the United States, the natural thing to think, I think, is that they must be taking American jobs. But economists say that there isn't really evidence to back up that has happened, that they're taking these American jobs en masse. I think you have to keep in mind that the young people who have DACA permits tend to be pretty well educated. So they're kind of, a way to think about it is that they're kind of closer in line to people from other countries who come to the U.S. as high-skilled workers on immigrant visas that are called H-1B visas. So those visas go to people from other countries because we don't have enough people with the skills that they have here at home.
What effects do economists think that DACA will have on the future of the American economy?
As far as I can tell, the DACA program is pretty popular among most Americans, including economists. There's no evidence, as far as I can tell, that this has hurt the economy. And in fact, there's a real concern that if for some reason all of these young people who were educated in the United States and have been benefiting to our economy, that if they left, we'd sort of be missing out. I think one of the misconceptions is that these young people, that undocumented immigrants, have been like taking, you know, so many public resources. But the reality is that, you know, they were getting free public education if they were in the public school system, but they couldn't apply for, you know, health insurance or Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare. You know, people think that they're getting all of these things, and the reality is that they're not. They're not allowed to. You need a Social Security number in order to reap Social Security benefits. And so what DACA did is it made these young people allowed these young people who were maybe like working under the table to pay taxes and pay for health insurance.
Sarah, you mentioned initially that this is about deferring deportation, giving them a reprieve for 2 years. So do people have to go and sign up every 2 years and be on the record?
Yeah. So every 2 years they have to renew. I mean, it could be less than that, but that's the average. And the government just sort of checks in on them, make sure they're, you know, still law abiding people. And when Obama left office and Trump came into office, there was this real concern that, you know, the federal government had all of these people's information. They know where they live, where they work, where they go to school. They know where their parents live and work or go to school. I mean, they have all of their information. And originally, when Obama introduced deferred action, you know, people were scared to come forward. They were going to have to, like, raise their hand and tell the government, hey, I'm here, undocumented. And one of the promises was that the federal government would not use their information to deport them. And so slowly people started signing up for it. And then when Trump gets in office, there was this real fear that immigration agents were going to start issuing letters of deportation to all of these people.
Is there a path to citizenship for DACA recipients?
No, it is. So all it does is say you can live in the United States without fear of being deported, unless you commit a crime, in which case you absolutely will get deported, and you can work legally.
Does this program, as it stands, give people confidence about building a future here, or does it just buy them some time?
It bought them time. That's the main thing that it did. It bought them time, and it helped. It enabled them to, as Obama said, you know, come out of the shadows. They started at least, I guess, admitting that they were undocumented because they knew that they didn't have to be fearful of deportation. One of the things, you know, when I interview families who are in this situation, and a lot of these families have mixed status, right? Like the dad will be undocumented, the mom will be a U.S. citizen or a legal permanent resident. One of the daughters will have DACA, deferred action, and then one of the sons was born and raised in the United States and is a U.S. citizen. You know, these are like really hard conversations for families because parents feel really guilty. Like, they did this to their kids. They brought them into the United States. And I spoke to one dad recently, and he said, you know, I feel like I cut off my daughter's wings. You know, she's on her second master's, and she's fearful that, you know, she might not be able to ever use it in the United States if this program goes away.
You talked a little bit about the Republican opposition to this program. Have they proposed an alternative?
I think everyone, Republicans and Democrats, seem to agree at this point that they do want a path to citizenship for young people. But the issue is, what do they give up in exchange for this path to citizenship? So Republicans say, you know, they're willing to give the Dreamers, the DACA recipients, this path to status only if, this is what Trump wants, only if taxpayers pay for Trump's border wall, if Congress approves the border wall, which, you know, Homeland Security says that would cost $21 billion. A study by MIT says it could cost closer to $38 billion. So they're sort of using this border wall as like a bargaining chip. And they say, in addition to that, they want more money for enforcement efforts to remove undocumented people from the United States, create more immigration detention centers with more beds to house more undocumented people. And the Dreamers, the DACA recipients, they're sort of like, do not use us as a bargaining chip. You know, they don't want to deport their parents and their aunts and their uncles in exchange for them to get a path to citizenship. And so that was one of the problems they had with the original DREAM Act. And so what they're asking Democratic lawmakers for right now is for what they call a clean DREAM Act, which is a path to citizenship that doesn't result in, you know, the deportation of their parents, or and that doesn't result in a border wall.
Polls do show that DACA is popular among most Americans. Will Dreamers be forced to leave if DACA ends?
Whether they'll be forced to leave is, I think, kind of a complicated question. I mean, I think Dreamers believe that immigration agents aren't going to show up at their door and deport them. I think some of them are definitely fearful of that. The older ones, I think, understand the legal system a little bit more. And I mean, it takes a lot of resources. I think it takes like $10,000 to deport one person, something like that. So what's more likely to happen is that they would get a letter in the mail that says, your deportation proceedings have now opened, or you are now ordered to leave the country. And so at that point, they just kind of return to the status they used to have, where they have to kind of live in the shadows, and they can't work anymore. So they lose their jobs, and kids lose their teacher, patients lose their nurse, and things like that. So it's more that they would be kind of forced back into the underground than than physically removed.
Sarah Gonzalez, she reports on youth and families for WNYC Radio in New York City. Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Of course. Thank you.
That is it for Civics 101 today. This episode was produced by Ben Henry. Our executive producer is Erica Janik. Music from Broke for Free. If you'd like to get even deeper into the topics that we cover on the podcast, you can check out our Extra Credit newsletter. It's all the offshoots and oddities that don't make it into the episode, and you can sign up for it at civics101podcast.org. I'm Virginia Prescott. Civics 101 is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.